Hey, everybody, Love welcome Talk to Radio. The Big Thompson Live Show. I am one of the co-hosts. My name is Eric Payne, and I have also been known to be called the Sun. And we also have our co-host, Wayne Gilman, that will be calling in a few minutes. And you are there?
I am Kay Thompson, Eric Thompson Payne.
Okay,
that's why I'm going to be, you know, calling you guys lately. Because
my name is Eric Payne. So.
Yes, but you know you wouldn't be able to be here without me. But anyway, listen, we are going to be talking to Wanda Payne. And Wanda Payne is the sister of Congressman Donald Payne, and she is an educator. And she's been an educator for a long period of time in the city of Newark. And she is one of those rare, not only say rare, but really dedicated, you know, really dedicated to the teaching, you know, profession. And we're going to get some information on what she has felt over the years, if there are any changes, and to the school system and to the with the level of the children coming in. And I think she is still teaching elementary education, and we're going to be hearing from her in just about 5 minutes. And when she calls in, and she has been doing quite a while, teaching for quite a while, we're going to be talking to her about more parental involvement. In other words, if she has seen changes over a period of time. I'm going to let her talk and tell us about how many years that she has been in education. At the same time, you know, being the daughter of Congressman Senior, Congressman Payne Senior, and the daughter and the sister, rather, of Donald Payne Jr. And she is, I forget the name of the school, but I remember I filled in for Wanda over at the elementary school in Newark for, you know, I think about a week. I'll have to tell you about that at another time. But I'm going to talk to her about what kind of changes she has seen in the Newark school system. What about parental involvement, which always seems to be, you know, a source of contention in various schools in the different states. And what can be done in the future to, you know, really, you know, improve on the learning programs, on the reading program? How do we make, in fact, how do we produce this very successful teacher, which would also lead to successful students, you know? And we're also going to be talking about the teacher inquirement and where does the desire to teach school children come from? Does it allow one to be very creative in teaching? Yeah, if you have that kind of nerve. When I was teaching at Maple Avenue School in Newark, you know, I had to be creative because the kids in the elementary school and the junior high school, not so much the junior high school, but the elementary school, were really, really hilarious. So we're going to try to see if we can get Wanda in here and Wayne Gilman. Where is he? We're waiting for Wayne Gilman. So anyway, and we're going to be talking about the educational program in Newark.
Okay. And while we're waiting for Wanda to discuss that educational discussion, we're going to talk about the news that's happening, perhaps the news of the day, obviously. There's 1 week until the presidential election, a whole lot of stuff is going on. We recently in the news had the release of the FBI saying that they were opening or looking into some other emails of Hillary Clinton's aide, Huma Abedin, and the FBI announced that they were looking into some more emails of hers as it relates, looking into emails of hers as it relates to Hillary Clinton. You probably know the story by now. They were looking into Anthony Weiner, found out that his wife, Huma Abedin, had used his computer sometimes, and there might be some things relevant to the Clinton email situation. However, that's all he said. You know, we might have found some things, and a number of people in the Justice Department that have been attorney generals, Eric Holder, as well as Alberto Gonzalez, have come out and said, you know, that's for the head of the FBI to say that 1 week before. I think that we have Wanda Payne on. This is Wanda. What's going on?
Hi. I realized you were talking about the campaign.
Well, we're talking about politics just at the top of the show until you called, but, you know, we always talk about politics in our family. As you know, we kind of get pretty tired of it. So I'm going to let you and your aunt or officially call you Kay Thompson, the host of the show, or Wanda. Instead of being my cousin, you are officially a teacher today.
Uh-huh.
You're officially a teacher every day. But and a good teacher, too, because I'm in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Kids really good to us. Wanda is an excellent teacher. But you guys wanted to talk about the system of education today. Mon, you and Wanda, go ahead and take it away.
Yes, it's a very important, you know, system, of course. And where would we be without teachers, right, Wanda?
Oh, it's hard to hear. I'm going to a little bit. I think my phone is acting up.
Oh, okay. So anyway, well, yes, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Now I can.
Hello?
I can.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly. Now, listen, we want to get right into this. You know, your father was the one who taught, who first got me the job in teaching at, It was in Passaic, in the Passaic school system, where I was teaching fifth and sixth grade. And then we left there to go to, you know, to teach in York, you know, at Maple Avenue School, and to the sixth grade. And, boy, you know, the fifth and the sixth graders were, you know, a little bit rambunctious, but it was big fun. And you have, and you really, I really liked it. I liked it for a long period of time prior to going into, you know, broadcasting. But anyway, what kind of changes? Are there any profound changes that you noticed from, say, this? Well, I can't say from when you started, but say when you were teaching after about 4 or 5 years, and then there was this big jump. Your father, by the way, was a wonderful teacher. Okay, he taught me how to teach, really. So, what do you feel?
In terms of improvement, or do you, or a decline? Are you
anything you feel like?
Well, I think it really has changed a lot in terms of declining, and I think it's because of, well, I'm in the urban district, and different districts, you know, they work different ways, but with the, you know, state taking over, they seem to experiment on the inner city children, and they bring all kinds of programs that are not allowed or used in the suburban areas. And I think that that has a lot to do with the failing schools now, too, like Teach for America. I'm not a fan of that program, because basically what it is that you can have a degree in any field, and you can be hired as a teacher. And you stay, I forget, a period of time, 2 or 3 years, and your loans are forgiven. And I just think it's unfair because if you didn't really go to school for education, it may be because you can't find another job. And are you really, really invested in it because that was not your choice of field to go into? So are you really going to put your best foot forward? And a lot of Teach for America people don't look like us either, and that has become the shift that they're going into, too. And there's nothing wrong with a balance of African-American teachers and, you know, non-African-American teachers, but it seems like that's what's coming into our system now more so.
More so, meaning black African American teachers, or what?
With
they are more
Teach
or less
America.
Coming into the school system. Say it again.
With the Teach for America,
can you hear me?
It seems to be a lot. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes. Yes. Can you?
I'm sorry, my
you
phone is going
out. You have to move
closer
to your phone. Oh, okay.
So yeah, the Teach for America, it seems like it's because they come from out of state, and that's the other thing. They're not part of this community, and they have to go into an urban area. Like Teach for America is a federal program, and what it is they go, but they only go to inner city. Like they go to Philadelphia, or they go to Chicago, places like that. But it's not; they don't do it in the urban, in the suburban areas. And so you have all these inexperienced teachers who did not really get a formal education in education, and they're able to teach. And I think that that has really helped to you know, lower the standards and lower the outcome of the public education.
So what's the cause of that? Is that the hiring practices of the boards of education, you know, in African-American predominantly schools, or what?
Well, this was brought by, I believe, under President Bush. So this is a federal program, and it's federally funded. So that's when it came along. And I think it was trying to in the beginning, but it's not working like that. Where, you know how you would go and teach internationally? And I think he was trying to mirror that program. But what happened was in the United States, say you can live in Oregon, and you would have to pick a city like, again, like I said, like Chicago, New Orleans, Philadelphia, North Trenton, places like that to teach. So you're not even from here. And I think they get a housing stipend. They made the teachers village downtown. So it looks like it's here to stay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it can be almost like a cultural difference in city to city, depending on where the teachers come from and if they come into Newark and vice versa. Is that it? The cultural differences within that particular city?
Oh, yes. That's
and I'm not talking about national.
And I just think it's also the lack of real course study, vigorous study in education. Everybody can just walk in the room and be a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has a lot to do with it, too, because it's not only, okay, you may know math really well, but do you have time management? Do you have behavior management? Do you know how to deal with different situations in a room? I mean, you know, do you have other strategies other than just knowing the math? Do you know how to get struggling children to learn? Can you do differentiated instruction? It's a lot more to education than just saying, oh, I'm good at math, you know.
And do the teachers, you know, now, I mean, when I was teaching, and I worked for the Bell Elementary to junior high school, there's such a difference between the elementary schools and the junior high schools. I remember going when I was taught for a period of years and then left for a little while. And the quality of the kids, not the quality, but the behavioral aspects of some of the kids were completely different. And so I had to think of methods to get to them. And so I always do these crazy things in the classroom, but it always works and they always learn. What I did was I was wearing my hair very long at that particular time, and when they came to the door and they were allowed in by one of the helpers, I would pull my hair down in front of my eyes and look under my eyes at, you know, under my hair as I pulled my head up from my desk and looked at them and stared at them for a while. And they decided.
A cover?
Hello?
A cover. Oh, I'm here.
You're talking to somebody in the background?
Wait, yeah, I'm at a restaurant. Hold on. Okay.
Wow, okay.
I'm coming to where I can hear. I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
It was my birthday, you know. Somebody took me out for dinner, and they ran late, so
okay.
I timed
you
it.
You should tell me that in the beginning.
But I'm coming out, sorry. It's okay.
Happy
I
birthday.
Can hear better now. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now I can hear
and
a little better.
Yeah, I can. Can you hear us? All right.
So
hello?
I think that's a. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Hello?
Now we can. Yes, we're
My
on.
Phone is really acting up. Okay. So, you know, I think that that's a lot of the problem. And then the children have changed a lot, too. And then, and I'm in Newark, where, you know, when the Cammie Anderson situation under the Christie administration came in, and they came in with an agenda with the charter schools. So basically what happened was they started to not, you know, the public schools, especially where I am now, and I don't want to name the school, but give them very little. And the charter schools seem to be getting everything. You're working with less resources. You're left with the children that may not be as, you know, academically.
And who need it more.
Yes.
And they need, they need more education and more, you know, attention, I would imagine, than those that have. So you mean to tell me that it's changed that much?
You
and what about
what?
The teachers? How do they feel about, you know, the changes in the school system?
Well, or because we're going back to there's a lot of
younger
teachers. There's a lot of Central American teachers, so they don't live in North, and I guess they're not really affected by it as much. I don't know, and if you have nothing to compare it to, I've been in the school system for 30 years, and I've seen a change. If you're brand new,
I guess you think that this is what it is. You know.
And so how would the teachers not used to that, those kind of techniques or methods, how would they become used to it then if they weren't familiar with that kind of population? When I was there, you were given the first a certain length of time to improve, you know, before you got down, you know, called down to the principal's office. So is it still that way? I mean, who's oversighting this?
Well, they really want you to deal with your own problems, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of support, you know.
Not as if something goes wrong in the classroom, and if one student acts up, and I'm talking about the junior high school kids, because sometimes they can be pains in the neck, but you can just generally deal with them. I'm not talking about today, but I was able to deal with them because I had a lot of tricks up my sleeve, so which fascinated them, you know. So, and the parental involvement at that time in the South Ward of Europe was completely different. You know, the teachers, I mean, and the students living there, the people living in that area. The South Ward of Newark was, at one time, a desired place to live, you know, for them because of the school system. The North Ward was also had a little better educational, reputation.
But believe it or not, the South Ward
the Central Ward
was in a
thing
shift.
That was a problem. Yeah.
Happened was when they knocked all the high rises down, they kind of pushed the people into the South Ward and the West Ward. So now the South Ward is considered not a good place to be.
Wow.
You know,
okay.
High crime, you know, and all of that now in the South Ward.
Mm.
And the schools over there seem to be targeted the most. They've closed a lot of the schools in the South Ward. They closed Madison Avenue, Burgoyne, Bergen Street, Dayton. So Dayton is considered, Dayton Street,
Dayton?
14th Avenue. And they've sold a lot of or those 18th.
Maple Avenue.
What they've done was, and these KIPP, this KIPP is really big. It's KIPP, that's a charter movement. And they've come in and they renovated the buildings, and they have brand new everything. In the beginning, they share space, and when something becomes available, they take it over, they spruce it up, and that's the way it's been going. In fact, the Boys and Girls Club, which is really sad, now we only have one, where there was one in every ward. The only Boys and Girls Club left is on Avon Avenue. The one on Littleton Avenue, KIPP took it over. They did the whole building over, and now it's a charter school and a charter high school.
Wow.
So the charter movement is very, very big.
Boy, your father would be really very sad about that and probably get it wasn't maybe he would have been in a position to do something about that. Because when we first started teaching out there and he had got me that job, he was a teacher. And, I mean, he was one of the finest teachers out there in the Passaic School District, the Passaic Patterson School District. Everybody talked about Donald Payne. And, of course, when he had to leave and I had to leave and you know, do something else because I no longer wanted to teach, no longer interested in me that much because of the support from the different boards of education, you know, it had lessons. So it all depends on those who are in charge and how much attention that we have to pay to them and how much pressure we have to pay to them to have the proper, you know, guidance in the classrooms. You know, kids are being kids. And these days they're subjected to so many negative things, and teachers aren't expected, you know, to solve all the problems, but at least show interest and show a certain, you know, feelings of, you know, belonging. These kids belong to you when they are in your purview.
Yes.
In your classroom.
And they've changed a lot. The children are, you know, there's just a lot more
takes a lot more to keep them focused, you know, and the way, you know, they're being taught at home and what they bring to school. You're trying to correct certain behaviors, and then parents are reinforcing those behaviors. So it's really it's a draining job now, you know.
And so, what about parental involvement? Is there a lot of parental involvement?
Not much, no. Oh. No, not really. Not on things that they should be, you know.
Well, you know what,
if parents support more, I think that things would change. But, you know, when you calculate how many students are in New York and the amount that show up for the Board of Education meetings or whatever, it's like, what, maybe 2%, 3%, 5%. It's not a large percentage, you know, not with 40,000 children in New York, you know.
Wanda, I wanted to ask you some stuff. You mentioned that it's a little bit different. It's different now, the kids and the in terms of the home training.
Yes.
During the course of your career as a teacher, is it a drastic difference now in terms of the home training that these kids are coming to school with? Or, you know, they say the crack epidemic, obviously.
Yes,
that
has a lot to do with the behavior, you know, and the attention. A lot of children have this attention deficit where they can't focus. You know, it's a lot of that, too.
Right,
and
there's a lot
they started
of,
this
a lot of,
big, go ahead.
No, I was just going to finish on that thought, and you're going in the same direction, it sounds like. But, you know, that initial generation of crack users that are adults now and having kids, that has a devastating effect, right? In terms of this, their children.
Yeah, there are many variables. I mean, it could even be alcohol. You know, those children, they're called alcohol. But, you know, the alcohol, the children with the alcohol problem, you know, the crack addicts. And now there are some more kind of drugs out here now. People are taking more pills and things of that nature. So the children, the attention is really, they want more from them, and they give them longer periods of time. They think, the more we give you and the longer we make you sit here, it doesn't work because they can't sit that long.
So you
lose the control of the class because they're like, okay, I've had it. And because they're children, they start to act out. So you spend the next part of the lesson redirecting, interrupting. So the learning gets lost. You know.
Yeah. I remember when I was separate. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was remembering when I was substituting for you at one time at, you know, that particular school, and they were they were children who are you know, had been subjected, I think, to drugs or something like that, and you had to, you know, control them. Well, I was so totally unprepared. It got to be just at one particular point, you know, I was walking around trying to get them to sit for the next activity, and I couldn't catch them because they were running around the classroom. So I took off my shoes and ripped a hole in my stockings at that particular time and chased them. Got around about lunchtime and went into the principal's office. I said, look, I'm exhausted. I'm going home. That was not, I had never done that before. But it was because I had been away from the school. I'm not going to say because of, I don't have that much patience anymore. But anyway, it was because, and I talked to you about it, and you would explain to me how you were dealing with it, and it was not easy. And I admired you in that particular. Yeah, I really admired you because you were able to control him. They didn't know me. They thought they could get away with anything. But, you know, look, you know, you don't have to do that. Take back the money. I'll be the same one, you know. But I wasn't prepared. So, and of course, I asked the principal not to call me again. But anyway, you are to be admired, though, I'm telling you. The way that you were teaching the class was with a lot of patience and, you know, with a stern heart, but a loving heart. And I enjoyed watching you but I did not enjoy my last teaching experience at that particular school.
Yes, I understand. And it all depends on your administration and how much support you get and things of that nature, you know.
Yeah.
And and if you speak up too much, and they don't like that either because they just want you to go along with the program, you know, so then you become the outcast because you speak up, you know, and I'm not going to stop speaking up because if something is not right, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to bring it up.
Exactly.
Wanda, along those lines, right, when you say they don't like you to speak up, that would be the people who would be in administrative positions. They don't like you speaking up.
In the administrative position.
I see. I came in on the tail end of the whole kind of Cammy Anderson and things like that. But I want to ask, nowadays, with technology and society being what it is, you know, we have a very immediate gratification culture now with, you know, just technology. Things and answers are at literally at our fingertips, and they're instantaneous. And, you know, the remote controls, obviously, that was the beginning of it now. So I can imagine, does that affect the kids' attention span as well? I mean, you know.
Well, if we had working computers, I don't think that school has not too much of anything going on. I think that if you can overkill with anything, I think they need them, but I don't think you should rely on them all day. But for those children who you lose in, you know, and they're distracting, I think it's good for them to be able to have something else to do while you're trying to complete a lesson. I think it's good for, you know, times where it's almost like a reinforcer, but it shouldn't be an all-day thing. But I think that they do need to. But what's happening, and I don't think people are aware, they're like, there are no libraries in the schools. I've never heard of such. And they say because of technology, but come on, they need to still know how to open a book, know where the glossary is, know where the index is, know how to skim to get to M or page 300 without going page by page. They still need, and also research has shown you have to shift your eyes left to right. It helps your brain. And it helps you to become a better reader. That's why if you notice Alzheimer's, people like that, they do crossword puzzles. They do exercise. That's why gym is not just to have fun. There are certain exercises that are supposed to be in your gym period that stimulate your brain. If your brain is not moving left to right, it's sitting still. And so that's why if you notice, everything you do, it goes left, right. You do jumping jacks, you do the spins over, you do the bends to the side. Everything you do is like alternating your body parts because your brain has to be woken up. So, you know, they have to read, but now, you know, everything shoots out of the computer, and I don't know how good that is because people are not readers. They're not readers.
Yeah, exactly, and that is really not healthy anyway, because if they're not reading, how are they going to understand doing? But I have to say this to you about your father. I often wondered how in the world that he would get the kids quiet, so quiet. But he was, you know, with the YMCA, and he would tell them stories about, you know, the different places that he was expecting to go to. And he would, when Donald talked in a classroom, you know, he was very low-key. He didn't bother yelling. You know, or even raising his voice. He would just, you know, talk to the kids, and you know how he did that. And they had to struggle to listen to him. But what he was saying was so, you know, fascinating to them. He was talking about different things going on outside of his teaching job. So he had this, was really interested. And I tried that technique one time with having the kids read some literature, you know, of the different stories. One of the stories was Heidi. You know, the grandfather who lived on the hill in the snow and so forth and so on. And I just told the kids to be very, very creative, act out the stories the way you want to act them out. Fast forward to two kids in the classroom. They're going to be shocked if they hear me mention their names. But they decided to act out the story of Heidi. And each of them were acting out two parts. So I'm not going to say their names because one is an attorney right now and the other one is involved with a business dealing with Homeland Security. So I can't say who they are right now. But one would act as Heidi and the other one would act as the grandfather. And when they switched places, they would take off a wig and put on another wig. And it was hilarious. So I really think that me having a sense of humor in the fifth, but that was the fifth grade class, you know, and laughing
right.
at them, that it became, you know, something that I wanted to do, but it didn't happen to that in Passaic, or Passaic, the school.
And, but you're talking
Passaic.
Years and years
yeah.
ago without the things that are going on today. You know, you have a lot of single
yeah.
parents. You have a lot of very young parents.
Yeah, they were very
interested. Drug epidemic. You have
yeah.
a lot of stuff happening now. People don't even realize the children that were special ed are the parents now. So sometimes
yeah.
it can be genetic. And if you're special, how much, you know, if you're a non-reader, how can you help your child to read? You know, so there are a lot more factors out there than when you were teaching. You know,
yeah, yeah.
or when my father was teaching, those people are like 60-something years old. So it's a whole different kind of game now. It really is, you know.
Are you still excited about teaching as ever?
No, no, because like I said, I think where I am, the children are more difficult and, you know, the support is not there, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's harder, you know, and and this is the first time after 30 years I'm teaching alone, and you need that support. Even though, you know, I was put in first
wow.
grade unexpectedly, never taught that. So that, you know, you have to learn it, because even though it's one grade higher, it's still a whole other grade with a whole other set of skills that you need to know. So I was told the day of that that was my grade without really having time to study it. So I'm learning as I go along, and I've never worked alone. And, I mean, that's like 30 years. That's like you living with your husband all your life, and then they're gone, and you don't know what to do, you know. So it's like because they are so active and I don't have that extra help in the room to sit with that child that may not
yeah.
be able to complete it, it's difficult, you know.
So how would you suggest, in other words, do you have any input in organizations, you know, teachers' educational organization and the parents? Do parents readily come to the school? Will they come to meetings as readily as before?
No.
Or,
No.
Would the teachers
no, remember, I said
gather?
The parents are not
yeah.
as involved,
yeah.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to remember, we're still in, and it's starting to change a little bit, but we're still in that CAMI administration, and they had an agenda when they came to
what
New York. You know.
Is she ruling the system?
Let's follow up on what was their agenda from your perspective, Wanda, or CAMI?
Well, they wanted to change a lot to charter. You know, a lot to charter. And two, they kind of try to discourage them, which is happening, teachers that maybe at the top scale to leave because, I guess, you know, you cost too much money. So, you know, I think then, too, they try to wear you out when you just want to retire or you give up or whatever, which is sad because most of the seasoned, real, brass, you know, homegrown teachers are gone. And now you have a lot of these Teach for America, alternate route kind of teachers. So, you know.
Teach for America,
and
what's
I think
that again?
Teach for America.
Oh, and then
that's
I
a federal program. George Bush, I believe, brought that, you know, into law.
So do you think the whole charter school movement, what was maybe you guys?
Well, they claimed
that,
you know, it's better for the children, but it was okay to have one or two. I don't have a problem with choice, but when you continue to grow it with public funding, then the traditional schools are suffering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
and
they don't get as much.
Right, because charter school is taken from the same pool. I think we're going to have Wayne Gilman join this discussion. Hey, Wayne, how are you this evening?
Hi, good evening, everyone, and I apologize for my lateness, but I don't want to tell you that I fell asleep.
No problem.
Long day.
We're in the middle of a discussion about education. I don't know if you happen to be able to hear any of it.
Yeah,
when
just
you
heard
just
a little
on.
Bit about funding. I didn't get the chance to hear all.
Right. We're talking to Wanda. You were talking about initially, you know, a few charter schools were okay, but then they started being too many because they started taking the pool
and
or drawing from the. Go ahead.
Before you, I just wanted to know, and I'm not going to be, but is this an hour program?
Yeah, but if you have to go,
I'll do it for a few more because my dinner gets they probably wonder what happened to me. I came outside, but
do
another
right.
15
you,
minutes. But yeah, my birthday
Dinner.
Let me finish. Go ahead with the funding. What I was saying to them is when the charter school movement in North, it kind of blossomed and continued to blossom, where they're neglecting the traditional schools because they. You're like funding something in addition to what you were already funding. So the more you bring in, the less money the traditional schools are going to get. So it's less quality in materials, supplies, trips, whatever, you know, and it's unfair.
Well, you know, the only thing,
listen,
if you don't mind, I just.
Go ahead. We have about 2 minutes for the longest. Go ahead. Wayne.
Yeah, the only thing I want to say is that, I mean, I understand the whole concept, you know, with the whole issue of funding, you know, the city, I know here in New York City, they have a number of charter schools, and it seems like the charter schools have done a lot better, with maybe the exception of maybe a handful, than the public schools. But I firmly agree that there needs to be something done to improve the public system because not everyone, and there's a curve there in terms of getting people involved because if you go to a charter school and you're a student whose behavior is disruptive, they wouldn't tolerate that.
Right. They put them out.
And the thing is that I've seen this happen time and again. So a lot of these kids out here, especially those who are coming from, you know, very meager means, they don't have the facility or the wherewithal to go and get the kind of counseling that they need. And and it's tough. It's really tough. I had an opportunity to work in one. And it's just amazing. I guess it's better in other locations, but I can only speak of what I experienced in the Bronx.
But can I say, to piggyback off of what you're saying, okay, they tend to do better. But we're going to see, because what happens is there's a formula that they use. They can act like, oh, it's a lottery. They look at children's test scores, I'm sure. They look at all of that. Attendance. They look at their back. They look at things because if I'm sitting there trying to teach you about China and you're not getting it, but then if you're in a charter school and they're teaching you the same information and you're getting it, there's something wrong there. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
All public school teachers are not sitting at their desk with their feet up picking their nose. And I think it's very insulting because there is some kind of formula that they are using. NORC has something called NORC 1, where they, and I think they changed the name, same thing, changed the name, where they tell you, oh, you got choice, but when you go there, they will give you a choice of the schools that they tell you you can go to. It's not a real choice. So there's a strategy there. So I don't know if all charter schools are doing so much better or they get, you know, other kind of choices.
Well,
I don't want to say
studies have been done across the country where they say that the public education is still a lot better than what you get in some of the charter schools, but it's almost like half and half. I mean, it's just unfortunate that it's going to get to a point where, you know, there's a contingency of support for keeping the charter system because of what goes on in the public schools in certain localities. I just don't know what the answer is to change the condition because it is frustrating when you don't have children listening to you. Well, they walk around with this.
Wanda's actually in the system. She's actually a teacher, so she's speaking with a certain amount of experience more than any of us have.
Yeah.
Wanda, you were saying that there's a formula that they have. And I
of course. Do you think
elaborate.
There's a real lottery? Come on, how do they – come on. I that's what I believe. But I think now because they have expanded so much that now they're predicting the problems too. And all of the charter schools in Newark are not doing well. So you know what's happening? You've run out of certain type of children now. You're going to get some of the everything else. And that's what's happening. Yeah. So you'll see in a few years that it's not going to be as great as people think because you're going to continue to grow and you're going to continue to get just what public school gets, you know.
So because the charter school initially, if I'm understanding it right, and like I said, you guys might have covered that already, but it kind of cherry picks the best and the brightest. So these schools.
I think initially they did. I think initially they did. You know, I mean, I've heard that and I believe that because, again, what are they doing that if you went to school? And I'll say a lot of people don't even realize a lot of those charter school teachers, I don't think they have to be certified, you know, because it's a charter school. So how are they walking in and knowing what to do better than a teacher who went to school for education? I don't understand it. Really.
I guess it depends because I know in New York there's a curve there. I mean, you either do or you don't, you know, and that's it. I mean, even when I try to enter the system, I come from a background in broadcasting, and then all of a sudden, you know, I found myself in a career change, but I didn't have the qualifications. You know, I could sit in as a sub or something like that. But but every city it's different, you know. I can't speak for what goes on outside of New York.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you know one thing, Wanda, we've got time is up. But remember what I told you earlier. You know, that I was very interested in you becoming a speaker involved in the public school system. Right? Because you have a lot of ideas. You've been in the field of education for how many years now?
30
wow.
years. You have a lot of knowledge, you know, to impart to our community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's not give up on it. I know you won't because you are a born teacher. I have seen you in the classroom, and I don't know how you dealt with it, really.
Mm-hmm.
But with the patience of Joe. And I think really that comes from your father, Donald Penn, because he had a lot of patience, and he was so soft-spoken, and he could get more things done by just – And it wasn't a technique, because I used to watch him, and he was just speaking very quiet and very lowly, so that you had a strain. The kids had a strain to hear him, and it was just natural. So I kind of think that you may have that gene, and so you know you have to start speaking to the teacher. You have to start the speaking engagement. So let's get going on that.
Okay. Well, it was nice. Right. I'll be on again, but I better get in there if I wonder what happened to me. All right, thank you.
When was your birthday?
Friday.
Friday. I knew it was close by the 28th. To that was the 28th, right? 29th. I knew it was coming. Happy belated birthday, Wanda Payne.
All
right, thank you.
Happy birthday.
Thanks for being our guest this evening. Have a good birthday dinner. Start to then. That's Wanda Payne. Educator, my cousin, an educator in just run off all of it.
My niece, educator in Newark, and she's been teaching here for a long time. Loves the kids, loves the parents, and she has a technique of just complete patience and being very involved in the kids, you know, and making sure that they are safe.
Right.
And I've always
that's why I don't teach anymore because I lack the patience. You know, I tell you.
Let's put a pin in that particular conversation, Wayne. We got 1 week to go until the election. It would be bizarre of us not to at least talk about the presidential election, which is going to come up next week. Next Tuesday is voting day, so it's less than actually 1 week, 6 days. How are things looking in New York, or what's your assessment about the new development, Wayne, with the FBI and things like that?
Well, I tell you, the whole Comey piece really it blows me away. I mean, here's a guy that got the support of the leadership of the Congressional Black Caucus, you know, when he was being considered for the role to be in that position. And it just defies all logic. I mean, he had been roundly criticized by Trump prior to having come out with this, but it's all very curious, you know. I mean, the thing with Andrew Stein, I mean, it's just sad. I don't think there's anything that's going to add to this situation, to unless you are how do I put it? There are people who are tired of what's going on with the whole election process. It is fatiguing. I mean, it's having a psychological impact. And there are a lot of people, and I'm running into people who I know, who just all of a sudden now said, you know, I don't know if I'm going to go out there and vote. And I'm just saying you're playing into their hand, you know?
Okay.
It's just one of those things. I today I was talking to a friend of mine. My beloved car broke down. I mean, I'm sorry. I apologize for all this, but I would have been here sooner had it not gone to that nonsense. But I was in conversation while I was waiting to be towed, and, you know, they were just telling me, they said that, you know, they can't, you know, it's at a point where they were so tired of hearing the back and forth. Only one person seems to have the ethical standard and character to actually be in a position of president. But yet there's too much confusion that's going on because of her background and things that have happened in the past. It becomes fatiguing to just have to go through this. I'm glad we're at the last week, but I sure hope everybody – I was watching MSNBC last night, and I noticed that the early vote count in Florida is way out in front for Hillary Clinton. And I've certainly made it no secret that my support is there. And regardless of what goes on, I just don't think this latest scandal is going to change anything. And if anybody or that, I mean, I'm just surprised that the polls all of a sudden are so closed and things are tightening up. You know, I mean, Donald Trump has not changed his character. He is who he is. And we can't afford to risk having someone like that in office, you know. I you know, and there are a lot of people I know, as I go into some of the other communities where people don't necessarily look like me, I'm astounded by the support he's getting. You know, just looking at the front lawns of certain homes. I was telling you last time I was on, I was up in the Pennsylvania area, not far from the Jersey line. And I'm just taken back. But, you know, he's playing into a sea of ignorance. You know, if anybody thinks that all of a sudden when he becomes president, they're going to go out and get a job, you know, they're fooling themselves, you know? And that's what bothers
me. I mean, there's a whole lot of ignorance there on the part of a lot of those people, a lot of his supporters, and we already know that. And a lot of it is not ignorance. It's intentional. A nationalistic kind of racial purity view. And it's a view that suggests they're tired of America not being the same America that they knew, where people that looked a certain way were treated with preferred citizenship status. To me, people talk about getting tired of the election. Yeah, it's tiring. Donald Trump is an individual who has done some things that has been unprecedented, probably in many people's lifetimes, to see some of this. But I think about a previous time it makes me remember, and you talk about, and this is related to the fatigue factor, people just wanting it to be over. It makes me remember when I was a boy, and people were fighting for the right to vote when mm-hmm. they had to sign the Voting Rights Act for black people during my lifetime in the early 60s. And that the fact that black people didn't automatically have the right to vote on a national level is bizarre. But what's also more bizarre is that people died for that, and people marched and bled for that. So when
exactly.
now when people talk about the fatigue of having to sit there and listen, and because you have to, a lot of people have to get educated about the facts. That's really what's required here. You got to pay attention. Because politics and freedom, Malcolm X said, freedom is responsibility. So a lot of these people that want to get tired, and they're tired of the rhetoric and the back and forth, you know, that's what elected officials deal with every day.
Mm-hmm.
They're back and forth arguing, working out the issues and the housekeeping and the running of our country. That's what our government does.
Mm-hmm.
It runs our country.
Yeah.
It makes sure things are running smooth. Somebody has to be responsible enough to make sure the lights are on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody has to be responsible enough to make sure the water flows through the pipes.
Exactly.
Somebody has
right.
to be responsible enough to make sure the roads are paved and people just aren't walking down the street just shooting people, as Trump wants to say. So when these people talk about the fatigue of the election,
mm-hmm.
that's called being a free person in the world. And to have the nerve, or especially our people, who have the nerve to decide that they might not want to vote, when at one time it was such a precious thing to even have the right to even sit in a room with more than two people
yep.
and to discuss voting was illegal. So for these people that want to get tired of it, I have no sympathy. There's people that died for the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And just because it's long and you got to listen to people and you might have to pay attention and you might have to do some research on your own to find out really what's what, oh, woe is me. Because you could live in another one of those countries where there's a dictator. You could be living in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
You could be living in the Middle East. You could be living in China. But we live in the United States. So when these people want to talk about how bad or and Donald Trump is their guy is the man. Talk about how bad America is. It's rigged unless he wins.
Mm-hmm.
This reminds me of nothing more than the slavery times when anything is possible.
Yeah.
Anything
yeah.
is possible. This man stood up there and decided that he might not accept the election. The FBI is floating out stuff that they've never floated out before at an election. These are Wild West times. But it's also, that's how this country, the United States, we talk about democracy. The United States was a white supremacist society that evolved into a democracy. But if you listen to that, that means people moved over here and they thought it was okay to make another group, a race of people, slaves and subjugate every other race. So it was Wild West out here. It was doing whatever they wanted to do. And as time went on and the more sane people and the more reasonable people began to gain more power and influence, that's when society started becoming more normal, more civilized, so to speak. But now we've reverted back to some kind of uncivilization, very uncouth, where this guy was just anything he wants to say, he's saying it, and these people are still behind him.
Yes.
He's saying whatever he wants to say about women. He's saying whatever he wants to say about whoever. And regardless of what this man says, he still has a base that says, that's my guy.
He is anti-American. He's not American. He's anti-American. He has He has encouraged the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan. He also takes on a Hitleristic persona. All right. Even the FBI. You know, the head of the FBI now is looking into a little Loretta Lynch. Okay.
What?
Into this whole thing. She was on the other day saying, you know, and then also, you know, well, you've traveled in Europe and you spend time in Russia.
They're looking into his connections.
With the Russian government, of course. He has said so. I didn't let me get to it. That's right. So, but anyway, and also the American Indians, they're in danger, you know, because he is in, and the thing about him being anti-women with this floppy nonsense that he does, you know, it's just ridiculous. I can only think of and hope of one thing that would happen to him.
Right. But just to be clear, what you were talking about, because you never actually said it for anybody that might be listening, is that the FBI is looking into his former campaign manager, Paul Manafort's relationship and involvement with certain Russian individuals and individuals who are billionaires and some might have connections to the Russian mafia. I believe that's what you were
right.
referring to.
Mm-hmm.
No, because I just thought of that when you said that. But
okay.
No, that was
okay.
Also to the government there, you know, because they were saying, how the two of them were talking together and they liked each other. And even Putin was saying how wonderful President
right.
Trump would make.
Oh, you're just talking about his relationship. Yeah, well, his relationship with Russia and also
yes.
the most recent being that his former, like I said, the guy who has connections to that always had Russian dealings, but now it looks like it potentially a Russian mafia. You wanted to say, Wayne, as we're winding down. I'm sorry.
No, I just happen to agree with everyone. I the only thing I hope is that I hope all the Republicans take a page out of what the Florida Republicans apparently seem to be doing, that they're going to vote in the party line, but they're excluding the top ticket. You know, and the top of the ticket that they'll either vote, for Hillary or not vote at all and just, go with the rest of what's there for them. And I think people of conscience understand, that this guy, he's morally bankrupt. I mean, he should not. There should be now some sort of test or at least some sort of prerequisite to even run for this position, not because you have money and you have a gift of gab that you should have reason to hold a seat. I mean, I've never witnessed, no one has ever witnessed this, And
yeah.
I would hate to think that we'd have to go through this again. And I sure pray on Tuesday that the vote is not closed. I hope it's defining. We don't have to sit here and argue and go through the Supreme Court the way we did back in 2000.
Yeah, well, speaking of the Supreme Court, that's what a lot of these Republicans are saying. If Hillary gets in, one guy is talking about holding up all her nominations for 4 years and talking about impeaching her before she potentially gets elected. This is what I'm talking about. This is what, at least before, there was the facade, the pretense of civilization and being reasonable. Now, that's why I said these people are taking it back to, colonial times and things like that, where there's no reasonable approach to things. This man can say anything, and his supporters are with him. He might not decide to recognize to accept the results of the election. So what are you calling for? You're calling for an insurrection if you don't like the results?
Well, that's basically what they're leaning towards.
That we talked about it before, Amal. You and I were talking about that could potentially be considered in the arena of treasonous.
Of course, it is.
But they make up their own rules. This is what everybody else is saying. So willing to make up the good.
Yes, I have to jump in because I promised a young man in Bermuda. His name is Antoine, and he's a new journalist. And he is about 15 or 16. I promised him that I would say hello to him and keep up the good work. And he's going to be in New York soon, and I think that we're going to be able to get him on the show. However, we're at the end of St. Thompson Live, and thanks to Wayne Gilman.
Yes,
thank you,
and I'm sorry again.
For what?
I just apologize because of my car and the kind of day it's been. I literally walked in here, had every intention of being on time, and I've fell apart,
Great. All right, Wayne. Well, next is always next Wednesday. We want to tell everybody, listen to us every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/KThompsonLiveShow. You can listen to us live every Wednesday, 8 to 9, and the show is also archived where you can listen to any show any time of the day. Thanks for listening, everybody, to the K Thompson Live Show. Thanks, Wayne.
Thank you.
Say goodbye, Wayne.
And GoFundMe somewhere.
Go fund them somewhere. Thank you, Wayne Gilman.
I'm
Eric Payne. Thanks, everybody. And you are there.
I'm Kate Thompson, everybody. Yes, join us every Wednesday. We're having a good time and then also giving you some needed information. Kate Thompson Live.
Bye-bye, everybody. All righty.